What is crackling, everybody? Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That's right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look at the RSM Classic PGA DFS. Get you set for the final PGA DFS event that we have until the new year. So a long layoff after this, but it should be exciting as they are down in Georgia at the Sea Island Resort, and it should be a fun field. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a writer for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a writer and editor for NumberFire. Brandon, our final PGA podcast until the new year. How are you doing?
Anytime Brian Harman is the odds-on favorite to win an event, you know that I'm here for that.
Yeah, he was 158th in strokes gained approach for the full season last year. So, you know, let's ride, baby. That's kind of my takeaway there. It's definitely an interesting field. And I guess that my inclination when this is the case is to work harder to avoid chalk because there's no such thing as a sure thing here. Is that kind of your inclination as well?
Yeah, I think that's the way that, you know, it makes sense to approach it from that perspective. I don't really know who's going to be chalky. So that's kind of my problem.
Everyone I like. That's how it always works.
That's true. Whoever Jim likes is going to be at least 40% owned.
Yeah, I've never actually owned anyone less than that. So that's my go-to. This week, though, going to try to avoid it if at all possible. This course is actually two separate courses. They play three rounds at the Sea Island Seacoast? I don't know what it's called. Whatever. The Seaside. There it is. Okay, Seaside course, 7,005 yards. It's a par 70. One of their first two rounds will be at the Plantation course. That one is 7,058 yards and a par 72. Both those are shorter courses, but they're pretty different. The second course, the Plantation course, is more protected from the wind than the other, and that will come into effect based on the weather for this week. So I am taking into account when guys are at each one, which we won't know until Wednesday, but we'll talk about how to handle that later on. It's a pretty big field here with 150 plus golfers, so there is a cut after the first two rounds, so make sure you're finding guys who will get their way through. Brandon, which stats are you focusing on for this event?
So we have, you know, if your guys make it through all four rounds, they'll play three rounds at one course and then one round at the other course. So I'm focusing mostly on the Seaside course rather than the Plantation course. But either way, accuracy is what matters here, definitely when you compare it straight up to distance. But good drive rate and greens in regulation have correlated stronger to past success than just driving accuracy. So just keep that in mind. Strokes gained off the tee as well correlated really well with success here in the past. I think it's just a more direct measure of play off the tee. And for the first time in a while, strokes gained around the green is on my radar rather than just approach play. So I really need golfers who have good placement off the tee and can take advantage of a fairly easy course setup, especially when we look at the par 72 that plays significantly below par in the 2 years it's been used. So the list for me really is strokes gained off the tee, strokes gained around the green, greens in regulation, and either driving accuracy or good drive rate.
Yeah, I'm on good drive rate this week, just like last week. Same thing here for me. I saw the same thing that you did with good drive rate correlating better than accuracy did. So that's why we're both there. I have strokes gained approach and scrambling are two other ones that do matter quite a bit to me. So a bit of overlap between scrambling and strokes gained around the green. I'm leaning less on stats a little bit this week because of the weirdness of the field, I guess.
Because nobody has good stats.
Yeah. Yeah. There are like two guys who are palatable. Two. Two guys who are palatable based on my process with stats. So that's encouraging. I'm psyched. So let's dive into guys who have done well here in the past with the past history segment. Brandon, Charles Howell III has a good blend of experience and some decent finishes here. And I think that he's a guy who should be on our lists.
Yeah, so Howell has played this event seven straight years and was sixth back in 2010, then 32nd, 7th, 27th, cut, 9th, and 13th. So that means that he was 9th and 13th when You know, playing in this relatively new format of alternating between Seaside and Plantation to start the first two rounds, Howell enters after finishing fourth last week at the OHL, 15th at the HSBC, and 19th at the CJ Cup. He's 8,500 on FanDuel, 25-1 to win outright, according to Bet365. So Howell is shaping up to be a really popular option given the recent form. And if we're, you know, I don't have a great read on who's going to be chalky, but I
Sure.
think that Howell is going to be one of the more popular picks this week.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about that because I do like Charles Howell III. The one thing that gives me a bit of comfort there is that Brian Harman is 8,800 and Howell is 85, and Harman is the odds-on favorite. So my hope is that people won't use both, and if they choose between the two, that they will choose Harman. I think that Howell will carry ownership, but I'm hoping that Harman will suck away at least some of it. So I guess that's, I don't know if that's me being biased because I objectively like Charles Howell based on my process, but I guess it's kind of the way I'm talking myself into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that case. I don't know if Harmon's going to be popular.
Yeah.
Just be, I mean, he's Brian Harman, so
People know chill.
yeah. I mean, Brian Harman's got the home course narrative at least,
Sure.
and his, you know, as I pointed out, the gym, his personal website looks a bit like a low level sort of bodybuilding supplement website or
One
something
of
like
the one
that.
of the tabs is what's in the bag, and there's no question mark on it, and it really creeps me out, like 100%. I don't know
Yeah.
why that creeps me out, but it does. What's in the
Yeah, I mean,
bag, Brian?
there are a lot of narratives in play, so it shapes up well for Jim's process this week. But a lot of Georgia Bulldogs, Georgia Tech guys, just golfers who are from or around Georgia and have played these courses a lot. But you know, some of these golfers who've played the course a lot haven't always had success here. So you can kind of just overlook that if you want, or factor it in. I'm probably just gonna pick and choose.
Yeah, I mentioned that which stats I'm favoring, but narrative is always number one. Like, I know that there's, you can't encompass the will to win in a stat, Brandon. So clearly, if I've got a narrative that overrides, if I can talk myself into Patrick Rogers, even though he was 178th in strokes gained approach, because there's some narrative out there, great, let's go. Let's ride, man. I don't need a narrative though, Brandon, to talk
There is
myself into Kevin Kisner. Go ahead, sorry.
no strokes gained heart.
Okay. There is now. I'm applying to the PGA Tour website, and we will get that in there just for you. Kevin Kisner, super hit or miss here in the past of this course in the six tries he has had in his first three trips, resulting in a 26th place finish, a missed cut, and a 20th place finish. So two solid finishes and a missed cut. But then he came back in 2015. He finished fourth before winning the event in 2016. Then he came back last year, shot a 72 in round two, and missed the cut again. So he has had a win in the new format with including the Plantation course and a missed cut. We haven't seen Kisner since the Tour Championship, but he did do well there, and he has had high upside days here. So are you into Kisner this week at 9,800?
I mean, I want to play Matt Kuchar at 9,900 instead, and I don't think that I'm going to roll out two really high-priced guys. So
Yeah.
Kisner's just off of my list based on the fact that I can't roster both. So I'm not playing Kisner. I'm not that worried about it. Kuchar's better off the tee of late. He's a better putter of late, better with hitting greens in regulation. So I'd rather just play Kuchar, who is the best golfer in this field, at least by the official world golf rankings, and probably just everyone would probably be okay saying that Matt Kuchar is the best golfer in this field. So I'd rather rule out Kuchar at 9,900.
Yeah, I mean, Luke List isn't here. There's no Kyle Stanley, so I can understand why you would think that Matt Kuchar is the best in the field. Like, I can't really refute that because they're not here. I think that it depends on how you want to look at Kisner. If you want to look at him based on the end of 2017, then you could definitely make a case that Kuchar is better. But if you look at the full season numbers, and Kuchar's had some time, or Kisner rather, has had some time to kind of, decompress, shake off that bad August to September that he had. He was 48th in good drive rate, 40th in strokes gained approach, 30th in scrambling, which is not bad. So I'm okay with Kisner, and I think I'll wind up having a lot more of him than Kuchar, honestly. So this could be a good little head-to-head battle here for our head-to-head this week, the bobblehead. We'll see how that one winds up going. Let's dive into Chris Kirk here, Brandon. What have you seen with Chris Kirk at this event before?
So Kirk has also played here seven times since 2010. He won in 2013. He did miss the cut last year and in 2011, but since 2010, he has four top 25s at this event, including a pair of top fives. He was fourth after his win, so that would have been 2014. Kirk's recent form, definitely uninspiring, to say the least. He was cut at the Shriners, 34th at the Sanderson Farms, 54th at the CJ Cup. In fact, Kirk has missed 10 cuts over 26 events in 2017, somehow 12th at the Players, but just he's not someone you can look at and say that he's playing well. But the course form argument exists for Kirk. He went to Georgia, played this course in college, even though he's one of the guys, you know, he said he never really envisioned it to be a course that he'd, you know, play well, but he is 5,800. There are a lot of course angles there. He's a course horse. And in a field where you don't really love any golfer, you can really kind of just go with Kirk for a value price.
And there aren't a lot of good value plays this week. So do you think that Kirk is a guy who will be on your list for this week?
Yeah, I wrote him up in the primer on NumberFire. He's not someone I feel great about, but sure. I don't feel great about any golfer in this field. And that's not to say that I'm just, you know, guessing, but right. every golfer has his flaws this week, which isn't always the case. And a sport as volatile as golf, you gotta, you know, take your stands, plant your flags, and I'll probably end up planting a flag with Kirk this week and play him in some lineups.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk more about some lower priced guys later. There aren't many that are very good, so if we can get behind Chris Kirk, that would certainly help a lot of my roster builds as well. Let's talk about Jamie Lovemark here for a second. He's still pretty young, so doesn't have a ton of history here, but he has done well in his two events, and those two events have been the ones with the new format as well. First one was back in 2016 when he finished ninth. He shot 69 or lower in every round then, and then last year, he had kind of a rough round three, shooting a 70 there, which is par, but he still managed to finish sixth. His other rounds were 65, 66, and 67. The last time we saw Lovemark, though, was at the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open, where he struggled, missed the cut. So are you willing to buy him based on those two solid finishes here at 8,200?
Yeah, Lovemark's also just on my list. He's gained strokes in all facets of his game over the past 6 months, according to datagolf.ca. So that helps make up for some, you know, not great results necessarily of late. It was cut 40th, 33rd, 43rd, 32nd. So if you look at the recent form, it's not really there, but he is gaining strokes. And he was ninth here in his debut, as you mentioned. So yeah, I'll play him.
Sounded so inspiring. I think that's kind of the feeling in a lot of guys here, though.
Yeah.
I mean, with Lovemark, I think I have to decide how I view him relative to the other guys in that range. Like, there aren't a ton of guys who I like, but a lot of them are around that 8,000 to 9,000 range. So I think that's something that will draw me away. He's okay, and he's on my list. But I'm not stumbling out of my way to get him.
I might go with Siwoo Kim at 8,300 and just pray for the good Siwoo Kim and not the bad.
But not in cash.
Not in cash games.
No, he is not a cash game option. So, yeah, and his odds are crashing in a good way. So you got that going for you, and I think that makes sense too. So, I think that Lovemark, at least on my list, Siwoo Kim probably not, just because doesn't really fit my process. But hey, I understand why the odds are moving at least. So, before we move on, do you play NBA DFS? Then be sure to check out FanDuel's brand new Hot Hand series presented by NumberFire. Play 5 straight weeks of multi-entry NBA contests for the chance to win a share of over $50,000 in prizes, including free NumberFire premium subscriptions. To enter, go to FanDuel.com or download the app and make your first lineup now. That series getting going pretty soon here, so make sure you get yourself entered into the Hot Hand series presented by NumberFire. Again, go to FanDuel. FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app to get yourself started right now. Let's dive into current form, Brandon. Who is popping to you, who has had some pretty good results here recently?
It's got to be Brian Harmon. Mm-hmm. He's the odds-on favorite to win here, and recent form is part of the reason why. Harmon's coming off an 8th at the HSBC. He was 5th at the CJ Cup and 28th at the Tour Championship. Harmon has missed 2 straight cuts at this event, though. And prior to that, he was 41st, 10th, and 27th. Harmon was born in Savannah, Georgia. He was also a Georgia Bulldog and still lives nearby to this course. He's just 8,800 this week, which is pretty reasonable for someone golfing as well as he has. The results haven't necessarily carried over to this course, but 16-1, he's probably a hard one to pass up.
Yeah, I guess my first inclination when seeing he was 16-1 was that he would be chalky, but it sounds like you're not as convinced that'll happen.
Well, he's 7th in FanDuel pricing. If people just match the odds to the pricing, he's gonna be off the charts popular. Mm-hmm. But according to Fanshare Sports, he isn't even in the top 10.
Oh, really?
I don't know what his DraftKings price is.
Sure.
Load this up. It's early in the week, but he's only got 4 tags, so he's tied for 16th among golfers. So, I don't know. Maybe he won't be that popular, and if he's not, I would consider him more. But if he's going to be chalky, I don't think I'll go there.
Yeah, he's 100% based on ownership. If Brian Harmon can go under-owned with those Vegas odds, I will totally go for him. But he's going to be popular. I don't have enough conviction in him based on my process to say this is a guy on whom I am willing to swallow chalk. Like, if it's Ricky Fowler, sure, give me the chalk. That's fine. But for Brian Harmon, it's a bit of a different discussion. So I want to keep tabs on, you know, how much buzz he's getting throughout the week, because if he'll be popular, no thanks. If he won't be, then give me a lot of Brian Harmon. That's basically where I'm at right now when discussing him. Let's talk about Patton Kizzire for a second. And his history at this event, pretty wretched, but he's enticing this week with back-to-back top 5 finishes coming in. He won the OHL Classic last week thanks to an opening round 62. Not bad. That was after he finished 4th at the Shriners, 10th at the Sanderson Farms Championship. Before that, though, he did miss a cut at the Safeway Open. He's likely to be popular because of his streak, but he's also just 7,100. So how are you handling Kizzire this week, Brandon?
I'll probably still play him. Mm-hmm. He's just a bit too cheap, I think, at 7,100. His odds are 25-1. As you mentioned, the two top fives. And over the past 2 months, he's 15th in strokes gained off the tee, 9th in putting. He's a really good putter. 7th in greens in regulation. So I don't know if you can make a much better case. And I do think he'll be popular, but I don't know if he'll be overly popular.
Sure.
And if I get to read that he's going to be there are always just a few guys who are literally 50 or 60% owned on FanDuel like every week. And if I think he's going to be one of those guys, then I won't play him. But if not, then I'll just roll the dice with him again.
Yeah, and the good thing working in his favor, at least from a usage perspective, is that swallowing chalk at 8,800 for a guy you're not super sold on is a lot different than swallowing chalk at 7,100. For a guy who you're kind of okay with. So I would exclude Harmon at high ownership, but if like Kizzire, kind of like you said, like if he's going to be popular, sure, whatever, I'll still use him, but like if he's going to be overly popular, that's when I probably divest. So right now I'm leaning towards using him personally. And that could change based on the way that things go throughout the week. But right now, I think I'm pretty okay with him. Another guy I am actually more than pretty okay with is JJ Spawn, because Brandon, he is golfing really well right now, and he is a hard to find value option. Hallelujah. Thank you for JJ Spawn.
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, not many low-priced golfers have strong current form, but Spawn is just 6,500, and he's had back-to-back strong showings. After finishing 34th at the Sanderson Farms, he was 10th at the Shriners, 14th at the OHL last week. Played this event just one time, finished 57th last year. He's 45-1 to win, which is the 13th best odds in the field, but he's priced at the 30th most expensive on FanDuel. Again, if people match odds to pricing, he's probably going to be popular. But are you going to Spawn this week with limited value choices?
I think that Spawn has been on people's radars the last couple of weeks too. So that's another mark in the ownership box. Like, I think he will have a bit of ownership, but again, he's 6,500. He's golfing really well. He was 39th in strokes gained or in good drive rate last year. So like, he checks enough boxes where I am okay with him despite that. How about for you?
Well, he was 4.5% owned last week on FanDuel.
Really? Because yeah. I had like, I think like 60%.
Then you were overweight.
Apparently, I didn't think I was being contrarian by using him by any means.
No, I don't think so either. But there were, I mean, there were other guys in that range last week. I don't know if that's necessarily the case this week, but I certainly wouldn't expect Spawn to have restrictive ownership.
That's awesome. I will take, you know, if we can get 4.5% again, let's ride. I would be totally okay with that. Let's take a look here at Scott Brown. Hasn't necessarily been consistent in this 2018 season, but he has had some good finishes. The positive is that he has made the cut at all five events. Two of those were outside the top 60, but hey, you know, a cut is a cut regardless. In the others, his finishes are 23rd, 5th, and 6th, with that 6th place finish coming just last week at the OHL Classic. Brown is 7,200, which is a range. There are like four guys I think I like in that range for this week. So he is at least on my list. How about for you?
I considered him, but I really like a lot, or I'm at least indifferent about a lot of golfers in the 7,000 range, and can't play them all really. So I think Brown missed the cut for me. He's lost strokes off the tee over the past 2 months. He's been okay around the green, just okay with putting. So I'm just going to take a stand. And I think that Brown, if people especially play like the hometown sort of thing,
sure,
I think he'll be popular too. So I'm looking to fade Scott Brown. I don't know if he'll be super popular, but I like Jason Kokrak. I like Kazire. Yes. I think he'll be popular. I like Kevin Streelman. I'll go back to Chess and Hadley.
Me too. Let's ride, man. Everyone. Hopefully he's cleaned out those bowels after whatever the heck happened on Saturday.
Well, he was rostered on 60.89% of lineups last week.
So I'm going to have 80% again. Let's go. So, just don't eat anything for the entire weekend, Chesson. Starve yourself, man.
Yeah, so just I'm pretty sure he likes Bojangles. I think that's on his website.
Bojangles is awesome. That's fine. That's definitely not where he got it.
But, you know, all four of those guys I just named are between 7 and 73. So yeah. I think Scott Brown just by process of elimination is not going to make the cut for
me. Did you mention Streelman? Because he's in that range for me too.
Yeah, Hadley, Streelman, Kazire, Kokrak. I like those four at least.
I don't hate Russell Knox, 75. He's a little bit expensive, but I think that he's at least in that consideration too. So there are more guys in that range than I thought there would be that I like. So I think I'm probably, you know, he's on my list as a guy I could use, but I don't think I'll have a lot of Scott Brown either. So that's probably the way things will break here. Let's take a look at the Vegas odds for this week. Brian Harman, as Brandon mentioned, is the odds-on favorite at 16-1, according to Bet365. Kevin Kisner, right in his tracks, at 18-1. And you got both Matt Kuchar and Webb Simpson at 20-1. Charles Howell III, Bill Haas and Patton Kizzire are 25-1. Brant Snedeker and Chesson Hadley are 28-1. And Ollie Schneiderjans rounds out the top group at 30-1. So, Brandon, what stands out to you among the top guys in that group?
I think the very fact that Brian Harman is the favorite, that's what stands out most, because that means that probably anybody can win this event.
Yeah, I accidentally wrote Harbor, and I think that might be a sign that maybe he is not good for my lineups this week.
Brian Harmer.
It's a sign from my fingers that this is not going to work out.
Yeah, I think really what I'm seeing here is I like Kuchar. Uh-huh. I just would rather play Kuchar. He's gonna grind his way to a made cut and probably like a top 15 at worst in his field. I do like Webb Simpson. I don't think I've said his name yet. And Chesson Hadley. He left with an illness.
Yeah.
He made the cut and then left. So it's not like he was just tanking and was like, I'm not feeling well, which, you know, does happen sometimes. Yeah. Kuchar, Simpson, Hadley, those guys stand out. But I do think that means that Kizzire is going to be, I guess I never really put it in that context just yet, but Kizzire's probably going to have some pretty high ownership.
Yeah, that makes sense too. So speaking of Kuchar, what movement have you seen so far?
Kuchar was 22-1, but he's now 20-1. So odds are moving in his favor. Webb Simpson lengthened, actually. He was 18, but he's now 20-1. Brant Snedeker lengthened from 22-28. Siwoo Kim made a huge jump. He opened at 80-1, but now he's all the way down to 40-1 at 8,300. So keep an eye on him this week. Kevin Streelman was 60-1, but now 50-1. He's only 7,300. Bo Hostler down to 66 from 80. Wee Kim, who I also like, down from 60 to 50. Luke Donald went from 55 to 80, but he's been a popular name this week from what I've seen so far. So not really moving in his favor, so keep an eye on that.
Yeah, Luke Donald, go Cats, but that is certainly concerning. Let's talk about Streelman for a second here, because he is a guy I find very interesting. Actually, we'll talk about Streelman later on. So let's talk about Wee Kim instead. I forgot. I didn't write him up, so I didn't. I forgot that you did, though, so we're okay there. But Wee Kim. Yes, Wee Kim. He hadn't been on my list. But I guess being 50-1 at 6,200 is really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote him up, so I'll talk about him later, too. But sure. I can talk about him now. He's 16th in accuracy over the past 2 months, so automatically he's kind of on my list there. 11th in strokes gained putting, 34th in greens and regulation, 47th in strokes gained off the tee, 46th around the green among golfers in this field. So statistically, he's popped. He was 27th here last season, so I like that as well. And some decent form. Don't want to give away everything.
Sure,
but
sure.
We Kim at 6,200. I say that like it's a surprise or something. But 6,200, I just like We Kim. I might have some... I'm probably going to have a lot of Wee Kim this week.
Okay. All right. So outside of Wee Kim, what other cheap guys do you see with intriguing odds or shorter odds this week?
Well, there's our dude, JJ Spahn. He's 6,500 this week, but he's 45-1. So that's really nice. Wee Kim again, 6,200, 50-1. Chris Kirk is priced at 5,800. He is 66-1 to win. Then we have Hudson Swafford at 70-1. Ryan Armour at 75. Luke Donald and JT Poston, 80-1, and Austin Cook is 90-1. Cook's still got some interesting form. He's got a case to be made for him.
And we were on Austin Cook last week too, and it actually worked out pretty well. Honestly, I was happy that you. I know. You know, just 50th. So like, it's not like he blew the doors off, but he looked pretty good for a while there. So I was pretty happy with that one, honestly. Given his price, for sure. What?
It was like. You just seem thankful that the pick didn't completely tank. So it's like,
eh. I mean, like, usually I'm pretty stubborn, and I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. Like, and I won't, like, let myself be talked into them, but you legitimately did talk me into Austin Cook last week, and it was like, hey, you know, I'll take a made cut for a guy at 56 or whatever he was. I'll take that.
can take it again this week.
Given all the lineups I had with Chess and Hadley, I'll take whatever I can get, man. Like, last week was brutal. It was bad. With that, I think I got saved a bit by a couple of guys, but I'm okay leaving the OHL Classic in the rearview mirror. Weather for this week, not any issues with rain on Thursday, but there will be some wind. It's at around 13 miles per hour Thursday morning, but by 1 p.m., it'll be below 10 miles per hour. The people at the Seaside course Thursday morning may not have ideal conditions. Again, that's the one that's more subject to wind based on, you know, the trees and stuff around it. Friday is much... it's pretty much constant wind, as it'll sit around 13 miles per hour most of the day. When you combine this with what we see for Thursday, my inclination would be to say that guys teeing off later on Thursday at the Seaside course would be set up for the best conditions of the week. Let's check back on that tomorrow, because when we recorded this Tuesday morning, tee times were not out yet. So I would go to, personally, when the tee times come out, see who is teeing off later Thursday at the Seaside course, and give them a slight bump. That would be my thoughts. I'll talk to Brandon in a second about his. Saturday, largely calm, but the winds will pick up later in the day, and there could be some rain at night. It shouldn't affect play, but it's something to watch because it could slow things down on Sunday. And on Sunday, there is a chance of rain in the morning, but that wind is going to whip. It is projected at 17 miles per hour the entire day for the final round, so could be kind of nasty there. I'm willing to give a bump again the guys teeing off later at the Seaside course on Thursday. Brandon, how are you adjusting based on this at least initial look at the weather?
So if it, assuming it holds, like you say, and it really would probably be advantageous to adjust based on tee times, I'd be willing, much more willing this week than most other weeks to try to factor in weather, mm-hmm. because I'm not sold on any particular golfer necessarily. And if I need to have a bit of a tiebreaker, or if there's a golfer such as Kazire, maybe, who's got a bad draw,
sure,
and I think he'll be popular, I still like him, but I might just try to dampen my ownership to a guy like that. So I don't think it's going to affect every decision I make, but I think I will probably try to use it more as a tiebreaker than just target all of the golfers who have the best wave.
Yeah, and that's probably the smart way to do it. You don't need to totally like avoid a guy you like just because he may not have the best draw. Just kind of, you know, maybe adjust your exposure essentially. And overall, I would favor, based on this forecast at least, I would favor everyone at Seaside on Thursday. I would want all of them. I'd bump all of them up just with a slighter preference for the guys teeing off later is essentially the way I'd look at it. Again, we don't know tee times yet when we're recording, so make sure you check that out. Cross-reference a couple guys, see when they're going, check the forecast, see it holds. I use Dark Sky Weather, which shows hourly wind conditions. That is my go-to there, and I would recommend checking things out Wednesday night to see the latest forecast, know kind of how you want to adjust there. So with that said, let's dive into our player picks for the RSM Classic. Brandon, who is your first high-priced guy you are targeting this week?
Matt Kuchar. He's 9,900. He's the most expensive golfer in the field. He's now 20-1 to win up, or I guess down from 22 at the Open. Kuchar has 5 top 25s at this event and 6 tries. And, you know, that's... for a guy with his just overall form at tougher events than this, that makes me feel pretty confident in how he attacks this course, or I guess this set of courses. The non-top 25 was a miscut last year, so that does concern me a little bit. But you know, Kuchar enters on a fairly spotty stretch of current form in terms of actually playing. It's just been spread out. In his only events since the Tour Championship, he was 31st in both the Bridgestone and the HSBC. But statistically, Kuchar's 21st in accuracy, 6th in strokes gained around the green, and 32nd in greens in regulation over the past 6 months among golfers in this field. I mean, he's just the class of this field. He's the best golfer based on the World Golf Rankings. And at his price, that makes him a prime option for me. And I'm willing to spend down a bit at other places because there's not that much difference between some of these mid-priced guys and some of the upper mid guys, or, you know, some of the lower mid-range golfers compared to the upper mid-range.
So we haven't chatted roster construction yet. Are you going Kuchar with like another high price guy, or what's like your second pricing tier going after Kuchar? Are you trying to get another super expensive guy in there?
In cash games?
Let's go tournaments.
In tournaments, I'll probably try to be a bit more balanced, because I think that a good handful of these golfers could win, mm-hmm. and I don't think I need to take super long shots because not too many guys stand out. Maybe I would roll. I could go top heavy, but again, unless it's Webb Simpson and Kuchar, I don't really have that much of an inclination to spend up on two high-priced golfers in the same lineup.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to try to get two is my initial inclination. Like the problem is I like both Kevin Kisner and Webb Simpson a lot. So let's talk about Kisner here for a second. We can get back to this discussion. I went back and forth between Kisner and Webb Simpson, but Kisner's coming off of a long break, and we haven't really gotten to talk about him for a while. So that is my official reasoning for endorsing Kevin Kisner here. We talked about his history at this course, but he's also had some good showings against great competition last year. He was third at the Tour Championship, which is his most recent event. He was also seventh at the PGA Championship, and this field is much below that. And while Kisner struggled a bit in August and early September, he still has not missed a cut since the Greenbrier in July. So I'm totally fine paying up for him, and I think that my initial thought is if I could get a lineup that has Kisner, Simpson, and Charles Howell III, I would be very happy. I just don't know, Brandon, if I can actually do that based on the low-priced options here.
I think you can. I think what I really want to try to do is load up on the, you know, JJ Spahn and above range.
Sure, like the 65 to 75 range?
Yeah. As I mentioned, I like four golfers in that 7,000, like 7,000 to 7,300 range. So I don't think I need to go too low. Although if I'm willing to roll the dice on Austin Cook,
sure,
I can make things work with a pretty balanced lineup. So
you mentioned Chris Kirk before too, is 58.
Yeah. But that's with Kuchar and Simpson. I can fit almost everyone. So I don't think you have to get too scrubsy this week.
Okay, cool.
So I'm probably going to opt more for balance and feel like a little bit more confident about all eight golfers than feel like I'm taking too many unnecessary risks.
Right. I think that makes sense. I just really want those three guys. Basically, maybe I'll just have to get like heavy exposure to all of them, maybe not have all three in the same lineup. We'll see how that winds up cranking out. So let's talk about Webb Simpson here. We've kind of discussed him tangentially a lot, but what do you see with Simpson here? A guy we both like quite a bit. I think he's probably the guy we agree most about here.
Yeah, probably. Simpson enters with strong odds to win. He's 18 to 1. He's a perfect 5-for-5 on cuts at this event since 2010. Simpson was 12th in 2010, 2nd, 7th, 41st, and 36th. In 2016, so his only try in the new format, he was 36, but that's still all right with me. And he enters with a 20th 2 weeks ago at the Shriners. His three events prior were 17th, 13th, and 9th, so he's golfing well. And among this field, Simpson is 7th in driving accuracy and 18th in strokes gained around the green over the past 6 months. You know, I really don't think any golfer is a sure thing this week, but sure. That form puts him near the top of the list for me, and I think I'll probably be building around Simpson and Kuchar whenever possible.
Yeah, I mentioned that based on what I want statistically, there were like two guys to fit what I wanted, and Webb Simpson was one of them. So I like him too. Totally on board with him. I will probably have quite a bit. I have really no reservations about him. Totally fine. Getting quite a bit of Webb Simpson as well. My second high price guy at 8,500 is Charles Howell III. He's a fun blend of everything that I want, even though he's not statistically as good as a guy like Webb Simpson may be. But Howell has good current form, good course history, and decent enough stats. He has rattled off three straight top 20 finishes, a 15th at the WGC, HSBC. He was fourth last week. And as Brandon mentioned, he has plenty of experience here, and he has done well in it, even if he has not gotten a win just yet. He finished last year ranked 63rd in strokes gained approach, 25th in scrambling. So I am totally down to rock with him here. Does he fit your roster construction this week, Brandon?
Not really. And his stats aren't what I'm looking for of late. They might be what you're looking for, but not for me. And I think that he is going to be popular on FanShare Sports. Howell has 9 tags as of Tuesday morning, which is tied with JT Poston for the most. So that's kind of surprising to me, but not Howell being the most, but Poston there as well. I think Howell is probably going to wind up being one of the few golfers who are just rostered on 50% or more of lineups. So I'm okay fading him. The recent stats aren't necessarily what I want. And if I'm looking at someone who doesn't fit statistically what I'm looking for, I'll probably just roll the dice with Chris Kirk at 5,800 rather than Howell at 85.
Why is JT Poston there? I know he had a fourth place finish a couple weeks ago, but like that surprises me, I guess.
He is 13th in strokes gained off the tee over the past 2 months, 6th around the green, 35th greens in regulation. He is 6,500 on FanDuel. I could see that. Missed the cut here last year, 14th, 4th the past 2 weeks. I'm not sure, but I mean, I don't think he's a terrible pick.
Yeah.
I just would prefer JJ Spawn.
Yep, same.
6,500.
Same price, would totally agree. Let's move on to the mid-priced range. Brandon, you said you're going to pepper guys who are around 7,000. Who is the first one on your list there?
That'll be Kevin Streelman. He bounced back from a 67th place finish at the Shriners with a 20th last week at the OHL. Prior to that, he was 10th and 13th to kick off the new PGA Tour season. Streelman finished 6th at this event back in 2011, but was cut in 2015 before rebounding with a 36th last year. Over the past 2 months, Streelman is 36th in this field in driving accuracy, 11th in strokes gained off the tee, 17th around the green, 2nd in greens in regulation, but he's 123rd in strokes gained putting. So if he can sink some putts, he's got the build to contend here. I don't think he's necessarily the safest bet in this mid-range, but I think that the upside's there if he can, you know, if he remembers to bring his putter.
And that's the thing too, is like when you're looking over small samples, if you see a guy struggling with putting, but still, beasting out in every other realm, they're a pretty good bet to show some improvement. So I like Streelman too. I think he fits a lot of what I want at 7,300. He's in a range that I think that your logic makes sense at just kind of peppering that range. So Streelman to me, pretty good play, and I will have him as well. At the same price though as Chesson Hadley, and again, he had the withdrawal last week when he was super popular, burned all of my rosters straight to the ground, but he said it was because he ate something funky on Friday night, so I'm pretty okay going back to him here. Before he withdrew there, his finishes were 4th, 2nd, and 3rd. If he had entered this tournament without that withdrawal, he could have been much more expensive than 7,300, and his odds could be better than 28-1. Betting public, though, is still in his side, you know, with 28-1 that says that they still like him. So I'm going back here. I'm hoping people avoid him after he burned them last week. I don't think there's any reason for long-term concern. So I'm going back to Hadley. How about you here, Brandon?
Yeah, it wasn't an injury. It was just an illness, and you know, he's already bounced back. He's in this field, so we can feel comfortable with him there. The recent form is just so good if you are willing to include the web.com. I don't really have much else to say. I really like Chesson Hadley at 7,300 this week.
Yeah, he will be a fixture in my tournament lineups. I think he's like okay for cash too, honestly, just because that withdrawal was from an illness. So are you okay with him in cash too, or am I being weird?
No, I mean,
okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Can you name 3 golfers you'd feel comfortable with in cash games this week?
Chesson Hadley, Spawn,
exactly.
Webb Simpson?
I mean,
Webb Simpson's a question mark, though.
Yeah, like, I think Hadley's a, I mean, you have to roster 8 golfers. Hadley's just
debatable.
Hadley 7,300. I think that he's in play for cash games because you're not going to find 8 cash game plays.
Yeah,
that you enjoy putting on your team, who you can actually fit on the same team.
And actually, while we're discussing that, I should mention I would definitely skew more towards tournaments this week than cash games based on this field. Whatever your normal distribution is between cash games and tournaments, I would be shuffling some more of that bankroll towards tournaments as opposed to cash. Is that the same thought process for you?
Yeah, but I always do that, so.
Yeah, that's fair. I like cash games more, even in golf. I know it's a volatile sport, but I love that volatility. Let's move on to your second mid-price guy. We talked about Patton Kizzire before, and I think that the case is very strong for using him.
Yeah, so he's last week's winner. So I think he'll carry ownership, but he's just too cheap, I think, with how he's playing. Over the past 2 months, Kizzire is 15th in strokes gained off the tee, 9th in putting, 7th in greens in regulation, again, over the past 2 months among golfers in the field. Prior to his win, he finished 4th, and that was following up a 10th-place finish as well. So he's playing well, obviously, with those stats. He did miss the cut at this event 2 straight years and was 54th in his first try, but his current form puts him on the radar here. So maybe the event form gets people a little bit nervous. I would be lying if I said it didn't make me nervous, but because Kizzire is just playing really well, so he'll be on a decent amount of my rosters, and I'll probably come Thursday morning be overweight on Kizzire.
Who do you rank highest in this range? Like Hadley, Kizzire, Streelman, Kokrak, guys like that. Who is your favorite one in that range?
All right, let me sort this by salary so I can. If I'm looking at 70.
For tournaments, I should specify.
Tournaments, Hadley, Streelman, Kizzire, Kokrak.
Okay. I think that's similar to mine, except I might put I'd put Kokrak above Kizzire, I think.
I just feel like the upside would be there with Kizzire. Yeah. Not that it'll put together back-to-back wins, but sure. It really wouldn't surprise me.
That makes sense. Let's talk about Kokrak here. He is my second mid-price guy. He's coming off of a 45th place finish last week, but a lot of that was because he shot a 74 in round 3. He was 69 or lower in the other 3 rounds, so it seemed like just kind of one bad day, or I guess multiple days, given the way that things went at the OHL Classic, kind of sunk him there. Before that, he was 20th at the Shriners, 7th at the Sanderson Farms Championship, 17th at the Safeway Open. And Kokrak doesn't have amazing stats, and his history here is pretty checkered, but he's good enough to compete against this field. So is he on your list this week as well, Brandon?
Yeah, he's definitely on my list. The driving accuracy is a concern. But again, nobody's without flaws this week. And he makes up for it with his play around the green. And he's been putting well lately. Historically, over the past 2 seasons, he's been a below average putter by strokes gained. So maybe this is the week that he just falls off the map. But
hope not.
I mean, I would hope not. I hope everyone wins this week. At least all 8 golfers that I would be using on a particular lineup.
Sure.
But
yeah, I think for me, he's beneath Streelman and Hadley, and I'm still debating where he is with Kizzire. Going back and forth there, but Kokrak will definitely be a guy that I use this week. Just still deciding kind of the exposure there. So let's dive into the lower pricing range. Brandon, who catches your eye down there?
I'm going to go with Wee Kim to start at 6,200, down to 50-1 to win. Already rattled these off, but again, 16th in driving accuracy in the past 2 months. Really want accuracy this week. 11th in putting, 34th in greens in regulation, 47th in strokes gained off the tee, 46th around the green. He did miss the cut at this event in 2014, but was 27th last season. And Kim finished 45th last week at the OHL, so people might not really be super on him. He's not the most well-known name by any means. But he finished 2nd at the Shriners and 4th at the CJ Cup, so I'm willing to buy into the stats. And hopefully he can reach the top 25 this time around.
Yeah, and the odds are certainly in his favor. You know, we mentioned that he was 60-1 before. He is now 50-1. So things trending the right way for Kim. I think he's got a good blend, like you mentioned, of things that I'm looking for. So he's on my list, too. I think I like JJ Spawn a bit more. So let's talk about him right here. He's just golfing well right now. And the price doesn't really reflect that yet at $6,500. Coming off a 14th place finish last week, he was also 10th at the Shriners, 34th at the Sanderson Farms Championship. And Spawn has played here just once, but got off to a hot start last year, shooting a 68 and a 65 in his first two rounds. Just kind of fell apart on the weekend. Did get experience, at least, so that's encouraging. He was solid off the tee last year. He was 39th in good drive rate, so he is going to be in my core this week. Between Kim and Spawn, Brandon, who do you think you'll wind up using more often?
Spawn.
By a decent amount?
Probably, okay. Yeah. Of course, I've been messing around with lineups as we talk, and going down to 300 from Spawn to Kim is giving me a lineup that I really like.
Okay.
So that's a concern for me in terms of I would rather play Spawn than Kim.
But it's not like Kim's a bad choice. So I think that it's not like Spawn is a lock. So I think if it's the difference between a lineup you love and one you're okay with, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's reeled off five straight cuts, Kim, that is, 27th here last season. So it's not like I'm that worried, but I do prefer Spawn. He just seems a bit safer to me.
Yeah, I always try to go super heavy exposure to three or so guys. And right now, Spawn will probably be one of those guys who's hovering around 80% or so. So I think that he would probably be definitely on my list for sure this week. Let's talk about Chris Kirk here, Brandon. Another guy we've talked a little bit about, and he's 5,800, and we need those savings at times.
Should I talk up Kirk or Austin Cook instead?
We've talked more about Kirk, so let's go to Cook.
All right, we'll talk about Austin Cook. He's the same price as Kirk at 5,800, so I think that makes him an interesting pivot if we find out that Kirk gets that that narrative boost and becomes popular by Thursday morning. Cook is 90-1 to win, and you know he was 50th last week at the OHL, but he was 20th at the Shriners and 25th the week before that. Prior to those, he was 8th, 11th, and 9th on his final three web.com events. And Cook is 8th in strokes gained around the green, 13th in putting, 25th off the tee and in accuracy, and 35th in greens and regulation over the past 2 months. Again, same price as Chris Kirk, so I think Cook could potentially be a low-owned pivot there this week.
Yeah, and again, he was fine last week, so I mean, the current form is good for Cook. I like him a lot, too. I think he's very interesting. The one problem I have is that I like Ryan Armour more, and he is 5,500. He's my second low price guy. He's coming off of a rough finish at the OHL Classic, but he was decent heading into that weekend, so I'm hoping he'll shake it off this week. He was 20th at the Shriners. He won the Sanderson Farms Championship. So we know he can have upside. And the thing that I love about Armour is that he sticks out on all my Excel sheets because he has that first place finish and good drive rate last year sticking out there. That draws me towards him because he's easy to find. So, you know, the approach game isn't bad. For 5,500, I can get behind Armour. Is he on your list at all, Brandon, or do you wind up going for Kirk and Cook more often?
Yeah, I do like Armour. Statistically, he's doing everything well right now, and that's hard to overlook in a field like this. Mm-hmm. If I've been rostering Armour in a little bit tougher fields, I should probably be on him this week. And frankly, when it comes down to it, if I'm staring at a lineup with 5,800 left, I might go Armour over
and keep the 300 on the table.
Yeah.
I would go him above Kirk for sure. And I think I'd go him above Cook. I think that he's just my favorite guy in that range. I like him a lot, honestly. Speaking of which, Brandon, little foreshadowing there. Who are your winners for this week? We'll go with one, whatever odds you want. And we'll go with one guy whose odds are 50-1 or longer.
Well, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
And it's because I wrote down Wee Kim as the long shot back when he was 60. Not that it's a super long shot, but
I actually have them as 60 on my sheet too, because this is from yesterday, so I didn't take that into consideration.
So my favorite pick is going to be, I don't know if I should go Kuchar or Simpson, but I'll go Simpson just because he's a little less obvious. And if I can't go with Wee Kim, I'll just go with Austin Cook.
Okay, I like that.
We don't even keep track, but
I don't even know who I picked last week. Paul Casey was in the field, so I honestly have no idea what I did. I might have actually picked Ryan Armour last week. I'll do it again. Ryan Armour is my long guy. He's 75-1. I'll pick him here. My other guy, it's Kisner. I'm hoping the layoff was good to help him, you know, shake off that weird August September vibe. You've kind of pushed me a little bit closer towards Kuchar throughout the podcast, so I might wind up having more Kuchar than I thought I did, but I still think I'll have more Kisner, and Kisner will be my pick for the win. Are you on Kisner at all? Like, if you had to talk me out of Kisner, what would you say here?
I'd rather play Kuchar.
Okay. All right. Kisner, a lock for our bobblehead head-to-head. Write it down right now. He's going to win. Kevin Kisner, your champion. Ryan Armour, second. That's how things will go down for this week. Yeah, this is our final PGA podcast for a long time. And Brandon, I know that, like, it's nice to have some extra time on Tuesday, but I'm kind of sad that we don't get to, you know, riff on JJ Spawn anymore. What are we going to do on Tuesdays?
Well, next Tuesday, we're going to do the NBA podcast.
Oh, look at you being the schedule here. I like it.
Yeah, I should just start hosting. I'll keep the schedule. I'll keep everything. No, I could never do what you do, Jim.
No, you could. You're good.
Maybe literally. I'll sleep a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a little bold of you to think you could sleep. Like Brandon said, next week we will have our NBA podcast on Tuesday because of Thanksgiving. Our NFL preview podcast will be on Wednesday. This week, though, same schedule. Got the PGA podcast today, obviously. NBA is on Wednesday. NFL Week 11 preview is on Thursday, so keeping things regular there. You can find all those by searching for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That's on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. And again, our iTunes contest is going down now. Our next drawing for a premium Number Fire premium membership will be at the beginning of December, so get those submissions in and listen to our other podcasts in that time to see if you have won. Brandon, if people want to follow you on Twitter and see all of your musings, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gudula13, GDULA13. Not sure I post too many musings, though.
You post charts, though.
That counts. I do post some charts. I try to keep it business. I don't think anybody wants my takes, especially when it comes to, like, Thanksgiving food.
Yeah, do not. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for bringing that up, because the people need to know, do not ask Brandon for his Thanksgiving food takes. He has, like, one. Like, your take that pizza is good for Thanksgiving is kind of good. I don't hate that take. It could be a lot worse. But everything else is just a dumpster can, honestly.
I mean, Thanksgiving's such a good meal that we make it once a year, so...
There you go. You outed yourself. I had nothing to do with this. That's all on you. Green bean casserole, though, is elite. And that is my only Thanksgiving food take. I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for this PGA podcast throughout the entire calendar year 2017. We are back at you in the new calendar year 2018. After the new year, come hit us up back here in the same place. But until then, good luck with the RSM Classic. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.